Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Proudly sponsored by Carryout, Ireland's leading independent off-licence. Carryout.ie.
Moncrief's Fact of the Day.
This is so good, you'll need to sit down.
Peacocks fake orgasm noises to trick peahens into thinking they're more sexually active.
Moncrief's Fact of the Day.
Bet you didn't know that now, did you?
53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. We do have a hashtag, as we do. And interestingly, Ivan has based it on our TV review slot from yesterday. So it's Room to Improve movies, which you might think on face value is a really difficult one to do. But actually, they're really, really good. 50 Shades of Grey Paint, for instance. Lots of text still about Noah or Time Traveller, but you know. I'll pretty much saying the same thing. Yes, he probably is a 19-year-old who's come up with a really, really clever hoax. And in a way, good on him. Anyway, time for Movies and Booze.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Proudly sponsored by Carryout, Ireland's leading independent off-licence. Carryout.ie.
It is time for Movies and Booze with thanks to Carryout, or Carryout, as I want to call them. Can I refer to them in a Scottish accent, or would they be annoyed? Let's not. Okay, we won't call them Carryout anymore. Just the once. Anyway, Tomás and Esther, join us once again. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Well, so it's kind of like the big two today in movie terms.
It is. Although Frances McDormand might have something to say about that.
But right,
yeah,
okay.
Of course, two major, major Oscar-contending movies. And two major Oscar-contending stars, our own Saoirse Ronan in Lady Bird, which I know people have been waiting for a while now to come out because it was out in the States before Christmas. So we've had a little wait for this one. And my new favourite actress, maybe Margot Robbie in I, Tonya, which is the story of Tonya Harding. An absolutely brilliant. It just rips up the rule book on the biopics front and just goes at it from a completely different angle.
Are both those movies based, you know, are the most striking things about it, the two performances of the leads? Would they have that in common?
Yeah, for sure. They're both awesome performances, but they're both very good films as well in their own right. And I, Tonya's up for 3 Oscar nominations. I think it should be up for more. And you'll also find Greta Gerwig is up for the director of Lady Bird, and writer is up for an Oscar nomination, a directorial nomination, and it's up for Best Picture. So there's a lot of good stuff going on in these films. Mm. But yeah, two great performances at the middle of them.
Yeah, but though I suppose, and I'm only basing this because it's from seeing the trailer for I, Tonya, but the stylistic aspect of it is there's lots of pieces to camera, as they call them, but they keep throwing doubt on the story they're telling you. They don't know if this is what actually happened or not.
It's a great way to handle a story where nobody actually knows what really happened, because there's so much, and we'll go into that in more detail later, but there was so much he said about
the whole thing
that to take that and actually just do he said, she said on film is a brilliant idea. It's very, very punkish, and it shouldn't work. I mean, people talking directly to camera often doesn't work, but it absolutely does work. And it's fab. It's a great movie. It's one of my favourites of the year so far.
And I suppose what's interesting, because I was just saying this to Esther, that somebody just rang up today before we came on air and said, what films are you doing today? And I said, Claire was on the phone and said, we're doing I, Tonya and Lady Bird. And whoever was on the phone said, oh, I don't like ice skating. I'm going to go and see Lady Bird. But it isn't really about ice skating,
well,
is it? It
seems to be about... There's a delightful amount of ice skating in it. And I suppose what really struck me was to be associated so much with one act, poor Tonya Harding, like people forget what a bloody great athlete she was. And you're reminded, I think, in some of the skating here, like she was really so good at top of her game, but she just didn't fit the mold of what they wanted an ice skater to be at that time in the States. So that's all really interesting. And there's a whole story about class. There's domestic abuse.
And the nature of celebrity.
Like, there's a lot going on in it. I think it's a terrific film.
Yeah, it's a very American story in that sense. And I suppose that's why Americans were so obsessed with the story and then so obsessed with their own reaction to the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're so obsessed with themselves.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating.
You know, and go, God, aren't we terrible? But let's not change ourselves. Let's not do that.
But also, who doesn't like ice skating? Like,
Oh, I'd say lots of people don't like ice skating. Well, I don't like ice skating. I don't see the point of it. Yeah.
No? Really?
Yeah. No. God, it's not a sport.
Is it? Yeah.
And it's not fair.
Anything where you have to rely on judges is not a sport. It's a beautiful, fantastic athletic experience, but it's not a sport.
Okay. Anything we rely on judges is not a sport. So yes. Boxing, then, isn't a sport.
I wouldn't consider boxing a sport. I really wouldn't. Unless we're going to go for a straight knockdown, and that's the only way you get out of the ring,
then it's
a sport. Then you're back to the Romans. But anything where you're judging it, then it's a qualitative artistic expression.
Okay, but you couldn't call boxing a qualitative artistic expression, really.
Oh, Conor yes,
McGregor.
You could.
Okay, that's an interesting point of view, actually. I must think about that some more. So today we're doing three wines.
We're doing three wines today. We've got Sauvignon Blanc from Marlborough, which is fascinating and is a low alcohol one, lower alcohol. It's not one of these 5.3% or no alcohol ones. It's 9%. Okay. So it's not going for, you know, it's got not going for the non-alcoholic market. It's going for just slightly less alcohol market and see if they're, you know, if it's out there. And it's from a company called Brancott Estate, who are the new name for what was Montana back in the day. And they are the people that planted the first Sauvignon Blanc in New Zealand back in Marlborough in about 1974, 1975. So they're really the originators of this. And they've had a very sharp eye on what people want in the market. And so if they're thinking this, it's certainly worth a look, an interesting sort of view on that. We have a second, we have a red wine, which is called I Heart Cabernet Sauvignon.
Indeed.
And that's another interesting story, very fascinating backstory to that. And then we have a vermouth.
Yes, this is all very... Is vermouth... You know, I think of vermouth, I think of the 1970s or something.
Yes, there's
was Cinzano Bianco a vermouth?
You're absolutely right. Yeah. So there's a certain louche, corduroy, suede sort of...
big moustache.
Those pictures made out of nails inexplicably on suede with wire going up and down them. That has that... there's that vibe there. But in fact, vermouth is nearly 8,000 years old. The first vermouths you find them in China about 6,000 BC, and you find them again in Greece. What is a vermouth? A vermouth is a wine that's been flavoured intensely with botanicals and plants and bark extracts and all kinds of other things. And it began as the first way of bringing medicine to people. So your bark and your botanicals that are being out there by apothecaries, they turn out to be rather, you know, aspirin from tree, you know, from tree bark and so forth, a bit unpalatable. But, you know, put it in a bit of wine and people were able to, it made the medicine go down.
We better have our first wine because you're going to need to be fortified to answer the many questions that are coming in to you. So is chess a sport? No judges. So does this mean darts and snooker are sports?
Yes. Yes. You see that? Absolutely.
There you go. It's a simple rule. So there are simple answers to every question. Yeah.
So our first wine then is the Brancott Estate. It's called Brancott Estate Flight. It's from Marlborough in New Zealand, obviously, and is really playing at the strong pyrazine green snappy grapefruit in your face kind of vibe. So it's lashing in the fruit. And what they do is, or how they've managed to do this, is they're picking very early. Because the way you get alcohol is yeast ferments sugars, fructose, all this kind of thing, material in very ripe grapes. So in Australia, where they let the thing go right the way through to a grape that's full and plenty of sugar and incredibly ripe and sweet. So ripe, sweet fruit that we know, you know, big ripe sweet that we enjoy eating the lovely sugary element to it, a nice plum or a big strawberry and so forth. If yeast could act on those in the right way and could transfer them, you'd have very high alcohol. So the grapes, you know, the Shiraz, they let it go right to the end. It has a huge sugar content. Then when the grapes come in, they can bring that right up to 15, 16%, maybe 16.5% when they've fermented out to dryness. If you've got almost no sugar, if you're in a climate where you can't get the thing to ripen, and so everything that you taste is a bit tart and bitter and just, you know, puckering, essentially German wines, for example, or wines from northern France. So champagne, before they put the little dosage in it and blend it all up to champagne, that's what you get with slightly underripe grapes. And a way to get underripe grapes, if you're not in a climate that's a midline climate, is to pick a little early. So people are constantly going out during the harvest period. They're going out going, no, not really. Another 5 or 6 weeks and it'll be there. You're waiting for Verizon for the thing to change colour, and a bit like when you a tomato. So they pick this when it's kind of like green with a little bit of red in it. You know, they're picking it just a bit earlier than anyone else because they want that tartness. And that tartness transfers into your 9% alcohol when you ferment it over. So it's a very interesting thing for them to have done. And at 9%, I think it works, because I find the 5%, there's a category of low alcohol wines at around 5.5%, and they're shallow, hollow, meaningless, empty husks.
Yes.
You know, there's something wrong. Something has failed here. You know,
it's like they're like the ice skating of the wine world.
Or the late Conor Reeves pictures. Yeah. You know, of the thing, just an empty, vacuous stare comes back to you. And then there's alcohol free, which is a whole different category.
Yeah.
And that can be very nice. And I grew up on Schlur, sort of grape juice, so it can be there's a certain charm to that. But here we have all those definitive flavors that you could want in this kind of in this package. This is widely available at independent off licenses, and you'll find them in Super Value and O'Brien's, but Carry Out have it, and they have it on sale down to $12.99 from $15.99, which is the more general price.
But there is a bit of a trend because it seemed to be going the other direction for a while, that the percentages in wines were going up and up and up, and it was,
this is the classic,
ridiculously strong.
It's the classic slapback, but I've responded by bringing in a vermouth, which is running at 17 and a bit percent.
That's the spirit.
But the reality is that the wine, the alcohol in the wine, and I've done a lot of taste testing, looking at various levels of alcohol. The alcohol in the wine brings with it quite an amount of the flavour profile that you wouldn't imagine that's in it. And it also, it brings it together. It brings together a lot of the taste because it gives it a little weight that helps you assess how the wine is moving through your mouth, because the alcohol evaporates very quickly, leaves the water residue at different parts in your mouth or at the back of your throat and so forth. And all those tiny movements, they really make an impact. It's like if you take out eggs from a cake, you really see the difference. If you lower the eggs from 6 eggs down to 4 eggs, you'll see a difference. Bring it down to 2, it's still there. So the alcohol is part of an overall blending structure that's working. It's a small part, you know, it's only 12 or 13%, but it's fascinating as an experiment to see how it works.
Yeah.
But the New Zealand people are well ahead of the game, and this is it's a real growth category.
Someone's texting in to say, a sport is where you have to change your clothes. So darts is not a sport. Right, okay, you have to take a break back in a couple of minutes. 1890 453 106 is our low-call number. Our text number is 53106. That'll cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. Esther and Tomas are with us for Movies and Booze, with thanks to Carry Out. Ado says he's looking for a starter wine, as I've only tasted it once before and it was sort of dry, which was yuck. Any ideas?
A starter wine? I think that, you know, the nicest wines are to get into are soft white wines. A nice Chardonnay from Australia. There are some, you know, really McGuigan Chardonnay is out there, which is a very good and soft and easy and approachable wine. The rosé, you know, sweet rosés are also a very charming way to get into this. And Los Del Caz that O'Brien's do is a really attractive wine. It's kind of spicy but light and smooth, and I think you would have a look there as well. But, you know, we don't want to drive people into wine. It's something that you like and enjoy if you see it, and if you don't
pass on. There's a myriad world of other things to look at.
Yeah, indeed. Though I suppose some wines, like a, you know, a Fleury or something, is a bit lighter to start off with.
That's it. I mean, Bob Dylan started out on Burgundy, but soon hit the harder stuff.
Yeah.
So that he, and in that he was definitely going for those kind of light sweet reds, and that's what you've got. You know, those are the light sweet reds. What I wouldn't start with is an aggressive Riesling, or a really sort of tannic Bordeaux. You know, really austere. Yeah. And they tend to be very expensive, so you know, you wait till you get round to tasting those.
Paddy, now this is a vague one. I've two bottles of wine that were imported to the US in 1962. They're beautiful bottles. I think they are Greek. Would you have any idea?
No, but I would say,
unsurprisingly, Paddy,
there were two Greek firms. Skouros was one of them. And there was another one from Thessalonica, and they were imported everywhere in Europe in the late 50s, early 60s, and it was quite fashionable. And it was the kind of Greek shipping magnate period of the world, you know, time of the world. So it was a little bit of that. I would think it would be a very unusual circumstance that they would have preserved in any great quality. That's all I would say there.
Brendan says, I saw The Shape of Water during the week and I'm unclear about all the awards fuss surrounding it. For me, the story was just a glossed up version of Shrek. Quirky lady falls for ugly, slimy monster. The only real difference was that Del Toro decided to overstep the mark and include disgusting interspecies sex scene. Too far, dude.
No, that's what I loved about it.
The interspecies nookie.
Yeah, I'm not. That's a bit of a spoiler, by the way, but it's out there now. So, yeah. I like that he went all the way with that. I like that that happened.
Well, that they went all the way with that.
Yes. And I thought it was kind of daring, and it kind of,
because they never tell you in these movies how people go about doing that.
Yeah.
No, okay. Is it just like, no? Actually, you stick it here. Type conversations.
I just like the, usually with a fairy tale like that, they'd kind of go for the softer storyline, and I liked that they went there. And I, as I said to you, it's quite violent in places as well. Some of the violence.
But is it Shrek or is it Beauty and the Beast? Essentially,
I suppose it's more Beauty and the Beast. Yeah, I agree slightly with the overhype. I'm not quite on board with the now. When you hear something has 13 Oscar nominations, like that doesn't mean it's a better film than the film that has 6 Oscar nominations. It just means it ticks more technical boxes. Like a lot of those are for technical achievement, which is justified here. It's a beautifully made film, but I wasn't, it's very good, it's very lovely, I did like it, but I wasn't as in love with it as other reviewers were.
Yeah, that's a lot of nominations, all right. Louise says, I listen to your show every morning in the gym in Austin, Texas, and you have me dreaming of wine. Can't wait for a glass later. We're also eating chocolate, Louise, as well, just so you know. Marius wants to know, any good Romanian wines you'd recommend?
There are good Romanian wines out there, but they're hard enough to find in this jurisdiction. But you're right. That's the right place to be looking for the next breakthrough set of wines. They were the first people. You know, a lot of early wine for the Roman Empire actually was planted in Romania, as you might imagine.
Yes.
There are huge caves there. So the largest excavated wine cellars in the world are in Romania as well. I write about this once or twice a year, begging somebody to, you know, to bring in half a dozen of these things. But I'm afraid it's not a widespread. The good wines are not here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a shame. Genuine question: Do any of you really think people waited to see either? This is the two movies that we're reviewing today. Download Central across Ireland and the UK since they were released in America. Their point being that people don't go to the cinema to see the likes of Lady Bird or I, Tonya. They've already illegally downloaded it.
I wouldn't be on board with that at all. I don't want to watch an illegal download anyway, because you are costing people their jobs, really. I wouldn't be on board with that. I'd prefer to see something on the big screen anyway.
Well, no, their argument is that people are doing it, and surely the box office returns would argue otherwise, that people are going to the cinema to see that.
Sorry, yes. Yeah, I would hope so. I don't know. Some movies get leaked more than others, I suppose. But these are both great big screen experiences, I would say.
Miriam says, you know what? I was watching Mr. Mercedes, and at the weekend I was watching Harry Potter. What a diverse actor. She means Brendan Gleeson. I think he may be my all-time favourite. I'm nearly afraid to commit to such a statement, but I'm going to bite the bullet on this. Says Miriam. Okay, good for you, Miriam. You stick with that
until you change your mind. I love him. And he was so good in Paddington 2 as well, as Knuckles McGinty, the prisoner turned kook in the prison where Paddington ends up going to jail. He was wonderful in it.
Okay.
Really good at comedy.
I'll just read through the next three or four texts without any comment at all. Jen says, you're mad. Ice skating requires such skill and training. Look at those jumps and kicks, all those lifts and the doubles. You're all wrong on this. Is rugby a sport? I would consider a referee to be a judge because they judge whether or not something is a try and therefore hold the ability to award points similar to a judge. So there goes rugby and tennis, says Brendan, with touch judges and Hawkeye and of course all the gymnastic events. I reckon if you can say that's great sport, then it is. Kira says, I think Thomas needs to redefine and perhaps rewrite the World Sporting Handbook as I'm really confused now. Okay, we'll just leave a pause for an uncomfortable silence. That's good. All done. Can you ask your guest if Buckfast Tonic qualifies as a vermouth, please? Sive wants to know.
Theoretically, I would say I would definitely put it into the same class or genus. I would put it into the same genus because what we're looking at, I mean, vermouth has a very specific criteria, and that's really vermouth is the German pronunciation of woodworm. So woodworm.
Ugh.
And woodworm, woodworm, or worm of the wood, is what this is about. So there's woodworm in this, and that's the in vermouths. You'll find woodworm as a predominant thing, particularly on the red side. It's as a plant. Woodworm is an active one, and it's.
I thought you might, woodworm was like a worm that you found in wood. People treat things for woodworm. No, there's loads of little holes in it.
We're talking a type of a botanical.
Okay,
we're talking
fair
botanical
enough.
Here,
I'm relieved now.
Which is Artemisia absinthia, by which you will get the second bit of it. It is the base active element in absinthe.
Colette says, hubby and I had the most gorgeous bottle of Shiraz a few years ago in a hotel called The Accomplice. The wine,
yes.
Not the hotel.
Yes.
I tried to get a bottle of it afterwards, but it was only available to trade. Any ideas where I might be able to get it?
No, it's only available to trade. you can get it out there. If you look on the World Wide Web, I don't like to push people to the World Wide Web because the problem is, yes, there are all the wines, particularly from other European countries, but then you start paying excise and all kinds of problems.
Yeah.
When you import it into this jurisdiction. But you could talk to a friendly importer and you could find some there.
Anthony says, I brought herself to 50 Shades Freed for Valentine's. The cinema was packed, but the only lads were me and two other deer in the headlights. I couldn't believe the carnival atmosphere in the cinema. There was a group of women to my left, all wearing nappies on their heads. Other women were shouted, go on, give them one at the screen. There was impromptu applause when he ripped her brassiere off. How Ireland has changed. Yes,
no, and I true. Just say for those few poor lads, girls, stop bringing poor fellas to see 50 Shades on Valentine's. I mean, they get you flowers and presents and stuff. Don't punish them
It's also very interesting. Like, generally speaking, men don't want to go to a film that has loads of sex scenes in it. How Ireland has changed again. Right, let's move on to our second wine to moth.
Well, this is the Fernando de Castilla Vermouth, and it's called, as you will see on the front label, it's V-R-M-U-T, Vermouth. Vermouth is that's the German, as we said, for this. And what you're looking at is wine infused with botanicals. And it's one of those things. It's a love it or hate it kind of thing. I will say that I poured you two, one there with a bit of citric lemon in it,
yeah.
And the one beside it there, which is it raw. Now, what we're looking at is these are woody flavors, and you're looking at foresty wooded flavors. They're outside of the conventional profile that we have come to accept as wine today, because we don't flavor our wines. And the reason we don't infuse them like this with botanicals, this was everywhere in the ancient world, because these were a way of preserving things. And was also, these were good for you. They had all these, it had the aspirin and the digestifs and so forth, and they still are used. And when you bring this and you distill it, you get liqueurs.
So, you know, when you get your base wines and your botanicals and you distill them, you get your Benedictines and your Neue Prat, well, not Neue Prat, which is a white vermouth. You get the strong liqueurs. And this was all, this would have been in apothecaries in the Middle Ages. So that's where you're looking at for this. But it's still there today. For instance, Retsina in Greece is a flavoured wine where they where they're dropping in essentially pine needles and so forth into it. So you get that kind of mentholyptic pine kind of vibe to the wine when you're tasting it. And it was a strong preservative for them at that time, and it killed a lot of any little bugs that were going. But they liked the flavour. They loved the flavour to it. They also sealed wine in. In these, in transporters in the large amphora, but also when they were transporting it, using honey, which was poured onto big mats full of lots of different herbs and things, and that made a nice seal. But of course, it then infused in the wine. And even though it might have started off in a transportation and preservation kind of mechanism, eventually people became to love. That's the taste they actually loved. So when you're tasting vermouth, you're really tasting a very ancient flavour. So it's a very ancient flavour, and it is non-industrial. It's rooted in earth in a much more dynamic and dramatic way than you might otherwise imagine. So these are tones that we don't get with a conventional wine. And that earthiness, it's a heavy, musky earthiness to it. And it has a kind of a viscous movement in the glass and so forth. Now, so it was invented in that way, you know, 6,000 years ago, and the Chinese used it. A lot of herbal medicine in China was delivered in this structure. It comes over to the Greeks use it, and then eventually it lands in Italy. And the Italians are really the people at the end of the Renaissance who spearhead moving it in two different directions. With white grapes, they move into dry vermouth, and the dry vermouth is the thing that is used for making martinis. And that's you find that in using a lot of French white grapes and Italian white grapes from northern Italy and southern France. So that's your martini side of it. If you're looking for a Manhattan, Manhattan is where you would use the red vermouth. This is slightly less lip-smackingly dry than the white vermouth. So vermouth exists in those two categories, this red woody one and then a white, very acetic and very straight, very floral. And herbaceous as well, but white and dry, very bone dry. Mm. And the, of course, people have often hated it. You know, so Winston Churchill's favorite recipe for making a great martini was that you should bring the bottle of vermouth into the room near the chilling gin vodka mix, let the sun shine on the vermouth bottle, and then take it back out again. So he was very particular in the way he liked his use of vermouth, but. What has happened over the last 3 or 4 years now is that people have been coming back to try and consider the fact that really well-made vermouth is made from, it starts off as being a wine. And here, this is Fernando de Castilla vermouth. It's around about €26, €26.95. You get it from Searson's and Baker Street Wines and independent shops all over the country. And what they're looking to do is show this as a wine. So they don't want you to pour in the gin, the vodka, the whiskey, the bourbon into it. We don't want to get Manhattans out of this. We want to taste the base material itself.
Yeah.
And so what's happened is a whole bespoke little artisan thing has grown up of Burgundy vermouths, Rioja vermouths, and here this one from Sherry. So this is Palo. Using a Palomino, an Oloroso, and a PX, two types of sherry. And they are then infusing this with the strong and interesting and flavorful botanicals. Mm. So it's a love it or hate it exercise, but I think it's definitely a very interesting development that's occurred over the last 2 or 3 years. A lot of very fancy restaurants have moved into this arena.
But you wouldn't have it with dinner. You'd have it after dinner.
You'd have it as a digestif in some ways, or a palate. It's not a palate cleanser. It's a palate soother. And it's always been something that people have taken after a very large meal.
Yes.
But it's a very interesting extra page to put onto the wine diary.
Yeah, I can't make up my mind, actually, whether I prefer it with the slice of lemon in it or not.
Yeah.
They're both quite different, actually.
Mm.
Do you have a view, Esther?
I'm a big vermouth fan, so.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. I've always liked it, actually.
Okay, so you...
But you don't often get nice ones in bars in Ireland. It can be hard to come across. Yeah. It's quite popular in France, though.
Yes, the big names would be things like Cinzano, for instance. People would know Cinzano. Cinzano Bianco, that's the white vermouth, et cetera, Rossi on the other side. So this one is the Fernando de Castilla. Ask for it by name.
Yeah.
That would be the way to try and get sort of the better vermouths in. So this is an artisan one, whereas there are a lot of big branded ones out there as well.
Yeah, and of course, it was wormwood that Tomás was saying. I'm the one that got it confused.
Did I say wormwood?
No, I think you said wormwood.
I said woodworm. I apologize.
I've planning a weekend in southwest France, thinking of Manavois or Corbière region. Any specific vineyard wine that Tomás would recommend?
Oh my goodness, yes. If you're going to the Manavois area, you must go to Château La Lavinier, or go to La Lavinier, which is Manavois La Lavinier. It's the tenderloin of Manavois. And there are four or five really interesting producers in there. L'Hostel Caz, which is the Caz family who own Chateau Lynch Bage in Bordeaux, the Grand Cru Classe. They're right in the centre of La Lavinier, Manavois, and I would definitely go there. And of course, you're pretty close to Carcassonne, so you can notch up a UNESCO World Heritage Site as you're there as well.
That's probably where they're flying into, actually. Probably in Carcassonne. Yeah. I'm headed to Greece for a week. Can Wine Man recommend any good red or white wines in Greece? Des wants to know.
I think the best thing to do is the ones that come here. This is the strangeness of it. It's a bit like Smithwick's and whatever they call it in Britain. They call it Kilkenny.
Yeah.
Yes, it's called Kilkenny in the rest of Europe. And you go there and they can't pronounce the Smithwick's. So there's a lot of great wine there that I wouldn't know. It's not coming here and would come here under different headings. So I wouldn't like to push you in that way. But what I would say is that I would look for wines from the Peloponnese. That's where there's some of the most fascinating stuff is going on there. And from the from Mount Olympus, from the Mount Olympus, okay, Appalachian Controle.
It's good enough for the gods.
Yes,
you know.
You're looking at some good, some very, very good white wines there, and that are made from the Assyrtiko grape is really the one to look for. So I would look for a few grape types and see if you might enjoy that. That's a kind of a playing in that kind of Tempranillo profile and could be interesting. But I wouldn't be confident to tell you the names there.
John in Rialto, his question is more psychology than anything else. I don't watch many movies. I certainly don't drink wine, but I listen every Friday. Why is this? Anyone?
Because we all, you know, not many of us have Ferraris, but we like to see them driven.
We're driving a Ferrari on your behalf, John, looking at it that way. Someone did text in earlier on about The Shape of Water, saying it was similar in plot to Shrek. Somebody else is texting to say, so you're telling me The Shape of Water could have been called Grinding Nemo. What film? There's a vision. What movie first?
Sorry, my brain's just done. Yeah. Let's do Itania first.
Okay, Itania after this.
Can I talk to you for a second, just about my score?
Happy to.
I know that you guys don't like me, but I'm landing all my jumps out there.
Tanya, it's never been entirely about the skating. I'll deny I ever said it, honey, but you're just not the image that we want to portray. We need to see a wholesome American family, and you just refuse to play along.
I don't have a wholesome American family. Why can't it just be about the skating?
There you go. After arguing that skating is a sport because it's based entirely on the judges' impartial judging of skill, there's a clip demonstrating that may not be the case. That's Itania there. But then again, at the same time, I suppose they're taking liberties there. But
well, highlighting an injustice against her as well, I would say.
That they're illustrating the attitude towards her. That she wasn't the kind of pin-up girl they were looking for.
Absolutely. This is great. That somebody, another reviewer called it the Goodfellas of ice skating. I really wish it was my cult, but it's not. And there is almost a feel of Scorsese off some of the, you know, off some of the scenes in the film, especially where they're talking direct to camera and stuff. And I suppose he was quite audacious in doing that all those years ago, and maybe a bit of a first there. And I would definitely say the director, Craig Gillespie, is channeling that, or has been looking at Scorsese a little bit, because this is rough around the edges in a wonderful way. You know, at this time of year, every year, I get a bit eye-rolly about the biopics come award season, because they tick boxes. You know, it's like daddy issues, check. Miserable childhood experience, check. You know, period in the doldrums, check. Alcoholism, check. And then there's a big comeback in the last scene, usually where they fall in love with somebody and are utterly redeemed for all their past acts. And you just get so bored with it. It's just... so conservative, you know, and here comes a movie, and I think I've used the term punkish already about this film in the last few weeks, and it really feels that they're taking a new approach to it, and I suppose it's fearless in a way and brazen as much as the subject matter that it's covering, because Tonya Harding was this, I suppose, for people maybe under the age of 30, 35, it's hard to emphasise what a story this was at the time. Like, it was absolutely... one of the greatest scandals in the history of ice skating, or of American sport, full stop, actually, because, you know, she never really quite figured out what happened, but she was basically married to this her ex-husband, a guy called Jeff, who was very abusive to her. And there are some really strong moments of violence in this film, and you feel really sad and sorry for her, and it really gives you, it really humanizes her, this film. Mm. But they were all a bit mad, let's say, you know, they were all a bit mad. And Jeff basically, you know, got somebody to attack Nancy Kerrigan, who was Tonya Harding's main rival in representing America in the Olympics at Lillehammer at the time, in the months following. And not only did they, like, fail to make the landing, they didn't hurt her badly enough. They bruised her leg and she was back again. But the... story was covered all over the world, and suddenly this girl who was not equipped to deal with it at all, and not really a sympathetic character, because she's a bit rough looking herself, and she, you know, wasn't equipped, I suppose, to articulate that she had nothing to do with it, and she became America's public enemy number one.
If she had nothing to do with it, but we don't know.
Nothing to do with it. You come out of this film believing her, I must say.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I suppose just to even say how much it became part of popular culture, like years ago. Obama, who's usually, you know, too suave to say things like this, but he had a dig at Hillary Clinton, saying that maybe he'd do a Tonya Harding on her. Like, you know, that's how much, you
it's
know,
in
imagine
the, yeah,
to be.
That's true, yeah.
Imagine to be an adjective, though, in that way. Like, it's just it's kind of depressing. And it goes into her story and her background and this mad kind of family that she grew up in. So we even see her as a kid. We were talking about the Oscars and the leading lady performances here, but we should point out there are two exceptional supporting performances in the movies we're reviewing today that are both up for Oscars as well. That's Allison Janney in this case, who plays her mother, who is absolutely terrific.
Yeah.
You think the performance is over the top, and then you see videos of the mother in real life. Mm. There's one scene where she has a budgie on her shoulder where she's talking direct to camera, and then she starts talking to the budgie. That video is on YouTube. You can find it. And she's that pushy mother who tries to bully achievement out of her daughter, I suppose, but ends up kind of undermining her all the time. It's actually a bit depressing to watch. Like, there's one scene towards the end of the film where she says to Margot Robbie's character, you know, I made you a champion knowing you'd hate me for it. That's the sacrifice a mother makes. And it's just so messed up on so many levels, you know. As I said, there are moments of real violence in this, and I suppose what really... it's kind of punctuated by mom's sharp violence, but she never feels like a victim. She almost just takes it on the chin. And that's kind of a really disturbing characterization of her, because it's like she's used to being slapped around. She's used to being treated badly and told she'll be worth nothing, you know. And she has this succession of relationships like this in the film. But the one place that she excels is in the ice skating rink. And she was absolutely terrific. The first US woman ever to land a triple axel. So that's a triple spin in the air and land perfectly. And she did it twice in one routine. And it was just like, wow. Mm. And if this incident hadn't happened, she'd be remembered for that. I suppose that's extraordinary. But people don't even think of her as as a great skater now at all, they think of her as doing a Tonya Harding, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit sad. But Margot Robbie is terrific in this. We're all talking about Saoirse versus Frances McDormand this year. I think Margot Robbie should be in the conversation more. I think the...
Margot Robbie nominated?
She's up for Best Actress.
Yeah.
At the Oscars, which is next weekend. And I think it's a shame. I think another year she would have run away with the Oscar Trail Award season. Because not only does she have to give all this range, and you know, she's changed her appearance so much. She learned to skate. Like, that's no mean feat.
Mm.
And she brings real empathy to the character. But she's not... You know, she's not an angel either now. She's still like a character. Like, she's a real character. Yeah. Like, there's one stage she's saying to camera, you know, like, what kind of person would bash in a friend's leg? And then she goes, what kind of person would do that? And then she pauses and says, to a friend. You know, it's just, you might do it to an enemy, you know, maybe. Yeah. So she's a morally dubious character.
Mm.
But I just love this. Directed by Craig Gillespie. A filmmaker I'm a big fan of. He made a film ages ago called Lars and the Real Girl, where he managed to persuade us that Ryan Gosling could be in love with a plastic blow-up sex doll.
Yes.
So he's very good at maybe taking audience prejudices and twisting them around over the course of some very, very good filmmaking. I loved this. It'll be on my list of best of the end of the year, I think.
All right. Okay. Ruth says, Margot Robbie is exceptional in all her movies. Wolf of Wall Street was incredible. I can't wait to see this. I'm a big fan.
I mean, when you look like Margot Robbie, you could take the check and do
very
conventional and boring films.
Absolutely, you could, yeah.
And I think she's really mixing it up. I think it's really interesting what she's doing.
Yeah, good for her. I can't wait to actually see that. Our hashtag, by the way, is Room to Improve Movies, A Grout of Africa, and Three Floorboards Outside B&Q in Newry. The Vermouth Grey Goose Vodka and Green Olives, the dirtiest, most delicious beverage ever. Says Katie in Wicklow. Mark wants to know, is there anywhere you can get Czech wine in Dublin?
That's even trickier. There's a lot of people interested in wines that are coming from from third locations.
Yeah.
The place I've found them is, first of all, there used to be. Up until the collapse on Parnell Square, there was a Czech and a Hungarian wine shop. So we've been there. We've been to that high water mark and dropped back. You go to the Eastern European shops, and you will find wines from the Czech Republic, from Slovenia, from Slovakia, Croatia. That whole sort of crescent rising up from the Adriatic. That's the place to find them.
Right. Okay. But I would have thought Czech wines would be relatively common here, European Union. And all that kind of stuff.
You know, they should be. They're absolutely brilliant because they're bohemian wines. Mostly they're the best. And they have the same exact structures and, you know, they're Rieslings and Gurnavitlers as Austrian wine because they are part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. That's whose wine they are. But no, they've suffered.
Yeah. Now, controversial. Terry says, is it just me or have we all reached Saoirse Ronan's saturation point? The promotional lead-in to this movie has been far too long. It seems an age since she disgraced our national airline on Saturday Night Live. I think there needs to be a much shorter time lapse between US and EU movie launches in order to avoid this kind of protracted fatigue, says Terry. Because I thought they were the general trend was that they were trying to release movies at the same time all over the world.
Yeah, and
to stop piracy.
And some of the Marvel stuff we even get before the States in the last couple of years. So I agree. I think it's been too long running. I think the other problem, if there's a bit of Saoirse fatigue, and it's not based on her performances in any way, it's more the kind of publicity end of things.
Yeah.
You know, she's great. And she's great. She's her best yet in Lady Bird. But I think what it is as well is the award season is too long. It's nearly 4 months long. So if a figure is prominent in award season, then you do get, you know, any actor who's out there campaigning.
That's true.
Get a bit tired.
But especially here, because it seems almost like, you know, from the start, there was a foregone conclusion she was going to win.
Yeah.
The poor girl, if she doesn't win an Oscar, she can't come back.
Plus, it's the second time in 3 years she's had a long campaign. So we're kind of punishing her for being awesome, really.
It's her own fault
for
being good. Sticky from Drimnagh says, I'll never forget Nancy Kerrigan's whiny, why, after the knee whacking in Reality. This is a clip of it. Yeah, I see what you mean. Right, we'll take a break. One more wine, one more movie after this. And action.
movies and booze on Moncrief.
Proudly sponsored by Carry Out Off License. Simply better wines and beers. Carryout.ie.